Yes, my man. How are you doing this morning?
Yeah, doing well. Excited to be here. Big fans of what you guys have built. I've been using it myself. So, yeah, thanks for inviting me on the show.
Of course, man. I appreciate the kind words. It's always awesome for us to hear from folks who are, kind of managing projects out there and building things that, utilize Lunar Crush from a kind of an enterprise or more like a B2B kind of mindset. So it's always fun. And I appreciate that. So we always like to start the show. Where are you in the world, and what's it like there today?
Yeah, I'm in the States right now. It's nice. I'm back from a long tour of duty, a tour of travel. Yeah, it's good to be back home with my wife, focusing on some deep work. Whereas yeah, a lot of recently has been around like traveling, meeting people, presenting, so.
Yeah, and I mean, we can go into that. I think we can spend a lot of time on that, but I'd like actually to touch on it to kind of start. Like, what has been your, we talked on backstage a little bit here. Like, John and I, we spent all day yesterday locked in an office with our CTO figuring out like, what are the plans? Like, everything needs to be rethought. You have to really put it all on the table and say, everything's on the chopping block. Like, you have to rethink it all. I mean, where are you guys? Where's your mindset changed from even like 6 weeks ago to today, just so with regards to being like an operator of a kind of a large organization?
Sure. Well, we're definitely comfortable in these types of environments, right? Like we're coming up on our fifth anniversary, quite soon. So we've been building throughout a variety of different types of market environments historically. And yeah, but I do think that it's important, especially during times like this, to align on, okay, what are your roadmap priorities? How are you thinking about product? Where do we think that the next round of growth will really come from, right? We've seen historically that when we combine things in ways that have never been combined before and kind of create a new mechanism or a new concept, something that's noteworthy, something that gets people excited and is something that people want to talk about, that's usually when we see that growth. I think both for the broader industry as well as Sky Mavis and the products that we've been building. So a lot of the conversations been around that. One of the important discussions that has stood out to me has been around how when we first started working on Axie, right, we saw it as this evolution of the digital pet, right? Something like a futuristic Pokemon or a futuristic Tamagotchi. And, down the line or over the years, we've really focused on, okay, that battle aspect, right? Like building out the game. And of course, like the game is connected to the breeding system, right? So you have proof of play in order to actually expand the supply. And that's been an interesting and engaging mechanic. But I think that we've maybe like not put enough thought into how do we elevate the collectible aspect? How do we increase the emotional relationship between an NFT owner, an Axie owner, and the Axie itself, right? Like, I think like people see Axies more as like pets that you use to battle now, right? It's like very battle-centric, and that's great. But I think like when I first discovered Axie, I also saw them as pets. I saw them as my companions during like a sad time, to be honest, actually, right? Like, so I think like playing into that and innovate and releasing things like cosmetics, right? The ability to upgrade the parts, making more breeding events, even introducing features that are more, even way more similar to something like a Tamagotchi where you're petting or feeding the Axie. I think these are going to be really important. And we want to use this time during the bear market to help to think about like, okay, what is the future of that type of progression? What's that type of experience look like?
I can kind of hear it in your voice just with, and we talked a little bit about like bear market, bull market, and having a little bit of time to think through it. Your head's kind of swirling, trying to figure out like the next kind of like emotional touch point with what's going on. And like we kind of went through that yesterday a little bit of, it's almost like it was like hours of stream of consciousness, just like here's the last couple years of things that have happened in the space, because I it was kind of similar with us, you know, when we launched, you know, the tokenomics and that ecosystem was, you kind of, when you have a startup, you kind of think you're going to have a little time to really think through things, maybe, you know, when things start to grow. And I'm sure, I mean, you were probably like 100x from even where we were, but it was almost like this inundation of just users and people coming in, and you're like, oh my God, like, how do we iterate on this? And how do we figure this out? And with a bull market, it's just like this fire hose of things coming at you, where, you know, now in a little bit of the bear market, you know, there's, I think there's a little bit of a difference between this bear market and maybe some other ones with this kind of cataclysmic things that are going on. And so how do you kind of think about it from a, you know, do you kind of compartmentalize that and just put that to the side? Is that something that you're like, hey, this is going to change the world, and here's how we see the world and our product differently now that that's happened? Or are you kind of saying like, hey, we've got something really good. Like, if we just continue down this marching path, we're going to be in a good spot.
So I think, of course, it's necessary to have an understanding of the current market environment and the way that it might affect members of your team and members of your community. I think in terms of the cataclysm, like, this bear market is nowhere, I think, as cataclysmic or existential to us than the last one. And the last one, like, you know, there were times where we had, you know, maybe a couple months of runway left. Mm-hmm. And whereas, you know, now we're in a situation where we have the resources to be able to build and for a long time. So yeah, I think it, you know, we have to have empathy and we have to have an understanding of the market environment. But at the same time, I think, like, that's part of our advantage as, you know, it's a team that's been building for 5 years, right? We have veterans on the team that can take some of the newcomers, both internally and within the community, under their arms or under their wing, to say, hey, like, you know, we've been through this before. It's going to be okay. These are the times that champions are made. These are the times that anti-fragile organizations are made. This is a chance for you to earn your stripes. I think that some people came into the Axie community, some people came into Sky Mavis during the huge hype cycle, and it was like, okay, it's nice, it's fun, it's, you're part of something that's winning and that's growing a lot. But for some people, they might be like, oh, I wish that I had a chance to contribute to what's happening, right? I wish that I was part of these catalyst I wish that I had helped build the foundation for this insanity or this huge onboarding wave. And now we have another opportunity, right? It's like a mulligan for all the builders. Yeah, bear markets are for builders. It's become a cliche, but it's a cliche because it's true. And yeah, you know, I think the environment is way more healthy now. Like, we're starting to see a lot of these bad actors and grifters leave the space. That's great. You know, sometimes you have to be small before you can be big. And then before you can get to that next level of scale, you have to, like, right, consolidate a bit. So one thing that I noticed with the community is like, okay, I can go back in the Discord now and talk to people. And it's all new people, it's all different people from last cycle. Yeah. And they're like, yeah, what, you're here? Like, it's like, wow, like, you know, last bear market, that was normal. Like, I would type something and then go to sleep and wake up and it would still be the last thing in the chat. So nobody cared last bear market. So I've been having a lot of good time. I have been having a great time re-engaging with this new generation, or engaging with this new generation that, you know, they might have come last year, but it was really hard to speak to them kind of directly, right? Like, I was maybe speaking at them using Twitter as my kind of microphone, but I wasn't involved. I wasn't able to engage in that back-to-back or back and forth dialogue with these community members like I am now that a lot of the noise and a lot of the short-term thinkers have left the space. Also, like, maybe a lot of the people who leave the space, like, we shouldn't just say that they're losers or short-term thinkers or grifters or whatever, right? Like, some of them, maybe they just, like, you know, the volatility is causing them way too much stress, and maybe they just shouldn't be involved with Web3 for now, right?
You know, it's really interesting hearing you talk, because you were talking about building emotional connection, and that's part of your strategy. And you were just talking about engaging with your community, which is also building an emotional connection. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious what you're seeing with your users. Like, you know, I'm sure there was a time when, you know, all the half of Discord was probably saying, why price go down? All they want to do is talk about the token. They're spamming you endlessly. Are you like, what kind of users are you seeing now? And are those users more about that emotional connection?
Yeah, they see Axie as a place for them to make friends with similar temperaments, talents, and convictions, to engage in a shared hobby or pursuit, right? So there's a lot more focus on the game. There's a lot more focus on the community. Of course, we still want to have a very strong economy, and we still want to create amazing assets, both ERC-20 and ERC-721, that create a special feeling for people when they own them, and regardless of the price, right? For example, like the Axis Governance token, regardless of the price, is still a piece of the game that you love, if you love the game, right? The axes themselves, right? There should be an emotional value in them, regardless of, you know, what the market is valuing them at any given moment.
So in a strange way, it sounds like your community's stronger than it's ever been, potentially. It's just shifted.
I think that's it's going through its maturation process, right? I would say that, yeah, like, you know, it's just definitely more healthy, I think, in a lot of ways, than, you know, 12 or 13 months ago.
I want to dive in a little bit to kind of the way that you've been thinking about, and maybe some of the adjustments that you're thinking about. You know, obviously it's like a lot of product stuff, but also kind of tokenomics that kind of come into that, and incentives are a big piece, obviously, of building a really cool game, right? And how do you kind of move those incentive pawns around in order to kind of, you know, it at the end of the day, it's like you were saying, it's like playing a game that you love regardless, right? But sometimes the incentives to those are collections, they're rewards, you know, they're badges, there's all of these things. Sure. Like it kind of sounded like you were talking a little bit more about like a micro economy of these kind of smaller type, like emotional things that are coming up. Like, how do you guys think and approach that, right? Like when you're looking and you're kind of debriefing on everything you've built, this thing works, this thing didn't work. Like how does something kind of get on the chopping block and say like, hey, we're going to sunset this thing because this didn't work, and we're going to move on and kind of create this product. Are you guys, is there a customer kind of journey loop that you guys are testing with? Are you A/B testing things? Are you just listening to the community and launching? Like, how do you actually think about that kind of product iteration?
Yeah, so I think this is something that we can get better at and more systematic with. But right there, I think we're blessed to have a large community that cares a lot. So we are able to get a lot of direct feedback from the community. And I think it's also about, like, you know, maybe sorting some of the signal from the noise, like knowing like, okay, who the different, where, what the context of the different feedback is. But, you know, historically we've done things like user interviews, making sure that we're not asking like leading questions, right? Like understanding, okay, who are our super fans, right? If we have the super fans on our side, right, they're the promoters, right? They're the ones who are getting their friends and their families involved. And, you know, oftentimes, right, it's like the users that are most valuable are not necessarily even just the users that are spending the most money. It's often like the users that are evangelizing the most and expanding the ecosystem. And it's like, okay, so let's talk to those users. Let's talk to the intense battlers, right? Let's talk to the collectors. But it's something that I think we need to get better at. And it's maybe not something that we haven't necessarily scaled up as we've grown. It was easy in the early days when kind of you almost know all your users, and you just by knowing them, almost being friends with them, being friends with them, you know what their archetype is, right? So I think systematic user interviews and feedback is something that needs to be elevated, I think, in Web3, and I can see us playing a big role in that. And yeah,
that's good. I mean, how do you think about those different archetypes? You know, like naturally, you know, in Web3, when there's a token involved, it's kind of similar. Like we have an analytics platform, it's social analytics for people to understand what projects are out there, and you know, there's always going to be this kind of subset of people that are out there that, you know, if you have even a very small percentage of that you know, we kind of call it proof of community, right? You're coming in, you're interacting with what we're doing, and then you can earn a little bit from that. And there's always this kind of subset of people that are just there for that, right? And if you have that incentive system there, those people are going to be there. And, you know, I think when kind of play to earn first kind of came out, there was this, that was a huge subset of what was going on. And then it was kind of finding the signal through the noise, like you're saying, we went through this exact same thing. And then now we're kind of seeing this budding community like in the bear market, but there's still those other folks that are going to be out there at all times. How do you think about feedback from those kind of different subsets, and how do you delineate those subsets and make sure that, because if you're going to go to someone that's saying, hey, they're kind of a more farm oriented, that person is going to say, well, just give away more. And you're like, well, I don't think that's necessarily the best direction to go. So how do you kind of like think through that?
Yeah, I think that having good user archetypes and understanding the relative importance of those archetypes, and this is super important. And the speculators will come and be there if you execute and create something that's amazing. That's maybe like the harsh reality, actually, is that if you're doing something that's working, the speculators are going to come in and like pour maybe too much oil on it, on your project. And another thing that I think like the founders of Eve Online would say is that, okay, like they've been running a player owned real money economy basically for 20 years. And it's like, okay, like give those speculators roles, give them work, give them things to do within the ecosystem so that they can't, you know, they're not just, right, I don't know, farming tokens and selling them, like create other types of work for them within the ecosystem. That's easier said with a game than it is with a DeFi protocol or something like that. It's part of the reason that I think that games are better for this, or I think like more compelling.
So I wanted to cover something. I mean, I was looking through the Sky Mavis website, and like the first thing that you talk about on there just totally like set me back. You talk about nation building. And I would love to hear a little bit more about how you guys think about that. That is huge. And so tell us more.
Yeah. So we see that we're in a transitional period in the course of human history where mainstream public institutions and legacy institutions, the nation state included, are losing trust at almost an exponential rate. And some people might think that, oh, we're heading towards some sort of a Mad Max type of a situation. This is cataclysmic.
Yeah.
But I think Web3 is about recognizing that, hey, this might be a good thing. This is an opportunity. And in the future, there may be other types of institutions or organizations that are able to perhaps self-organize online and maybe fulfill some of the things that these legacy institutions are doing, right? Like a sense of purpose, maybe a social safety net, right? Like even monetary systems, right? These are things that are traditionally been handled by, the system or these legacy nations. And I think part of what's happening is that people are asking questions around, like, you know, what if we didn't need a central bank to issue money, right? What if we didn't need, a government to do this and this and this and this, right? So I think like what we're seeing with Axie is, right, we have this global movement that's online, that's all people from all walks of life, many different types of countries are coming together with different backgrounds, temperaments, but this kind of shared belief in a common cause, right? What that might be like, right? Property rights on the internet, right? More freedom for gamers, so I think like what we're seeing is that, right, these digital nations are starting to form.
Yeah, and your product, like strategy, looks like it wraps around that. I mean, you've got your bridge, your wallet, your marketplace. I mean, are you viewing your product strategy around nation building? Is that kind of how you look at it?
Sorry, can you repeat the last part?
Oh yeah. No, I was saying, like, you know, it feels like your product strategy maps exactly to that. Like, you've got a marketplace, you've got a wallet, you've got bridges, you've got all these things. Do you look at, almost feels like they're kind of deconstructed. You know, where my mindset was that, oh yeah, this is Axie Infinity. And then I started digging into Sky Mavis. I'm like, wow, this is like deconstructed into so many different pieces. And are you looking at it like as a, I guess these are all just deconstructed pieces away from, say, a game that all goes towards nation building. Is that kind of how you look at it?
I think like what happens is when you combine a community with a right like a shared national pastime or a shared pastime with an economy, right? It's like you start to have something that's different than a game, right? It's kind of like a game, but it's also kind of like a country, and I think that's something that we realized, step by step. It wasn't like, hey, in 2018, let's start this digital nation, right? No, it was like, okay, in the beginning, we're like, huh, it's really interesting that this is more like a community than maybe like a game, right? It was like in the beginning, like when before we even had a game, we had a community that was really strong, right? It was like, okay, we have this community, and then we add in like the game, and then it just increases the bonds between the people in the system. And then, right, you start to have this, you have the marketplace, right? You have the digital property rights. And it starts to congeal and come together into something like far greater than the sum of its parts, right? So I talked about like, right, one of our principles is combining things that have never been combined before in novel ways. And right, like basically you can take five things that have existed separately, and combine them in a way and basically invent something, with even if none of the individual parts are actually new.
And do you look at those parts as almost like, I guess, you know, do you see yourself having more than one game, multiple games, and or do you kind of see this as the ecosystem's going to take over and build games within these products?
Yeah, so we've built Ronin, which we
Yep.
believe will be the home of, right, the most thoughtful, the best, the most polished Web3 games. And we want those games to come to us, to deploy on Ronin to, right? And it's like, and of course they would want to because we have the largest community, right? We have the most all-time NFT volume on any chain that's not Ethereum, and we have the largest community,
Yeah.
right? So, and it's like, okay, you come on Ronin, you build with us, you get access to our community, we have this marketplace, and all of a sudden, maybe in a couple of years, it's going to be like, oh, your game isn't on Ronin, then I don't want to play it, right? Like that's what victory would look like.
You're talking a little bit about pastime and like, you know, which is interesting because when you think about pastime and like that's kind of what people rally around with like tradition, you know, and like that. Like you used the word congeal, which is like perfect. It's like kind of that's all kind of just coming together in an amalgamation that turns into something new, which I think is a great way to think about the strategy. But just kind of going back for a second, you know, were you like a gamer when you got started? Is that like how you kind of found crypto in general? And you know, what did you play when you were younger?
Yeah, sure. Well, so yeah, all the founders, I think, have always been gamers. So I actually found Axie as a community member.
Yeah.
And I had started playing CryptoKitties just about 5 years ago, December 7th,
The
2017. So,
exact
yeah,
day.
my 1 year anniversary is coming up. I actually, yeah.
That's great.
So I've always been a gamer. I'm half Korean. And I'm an only child. So, my cousins were always like, maybe feeling bad for me. So they're like, wow, like he has no siblings. But we're Korean, so we know what games are good. So they got me into Diablo. They got me into StarCraft. I was a beta tester of World of Warcraft. I took World of Warcraft so seriously that I was sent to boarding school because I was staying up all night and I was sleeping during middle school at my desk. So my mom sent me away to boarding school, where they turn off the internet at 11 p.m. But we had Dota LAN parties, right? So at 11, we would just start playing Dota, and you would lane with the person, either your roommate or the person who lives in the room next to you, because we couldn't use Ventrilo. So yeah, I guess, I've always been a gamer. I've also always been a collector. My dad collects insects and fossils, so I grew up going on all these different expeditions with him. So yeah, I think like, you know, that did prepare me for understanding. Like when I saw CryptoKitties, I thought that it was actually all, you know, immediately thought that NFTs would be something huge because I saw that, I felt that feeling of when I own a Pokemon card, when I own an insect, or when I have a physical pet, I felt that feeling of ownership with these digital cat pictures. And I saw that the community felt really passionate about the project. So right, when I saw Axie, I was like, okay, this is more like Pokemon or Tamagotchi, but it has all the benefits, or it has the community aspect, it has the ownership and liquidity that we saw being put, you know, having potential in CryptoKitties. Okay, like I'm gonna learn more about this project, and you know, got more and more involved over time.
I asked that because I see a lot of similar stories. Like I have a similar story of like I played Rainbow Six as a kid and played it so much at night that I was falling asleep in school. And you know, I didn't get sent to boarding school. I probably should have though. But then I kind of graduated out and went like, which by the way, like it was always the clans from Korea that had like really fast internet. And there was always like us versus them, like one versus two, which is kind of funny that you say that. They're like so hardcore. And
yeah. When StarCraft was released, Korea was going through a debt crisis. Like all Koreans were like basically went to the central bank and deposited their family heirlooms and their gold. And now Korea is, you know, one of the most developed and advanced economies in the world. And I think that StarCraft and the rise of like online gaming contributed to that, because as they were looking to increase their semiconductor output and their internet latency, there was a source of demand for those upgrades, right? It wasn't just like the government saying, hey, we're going to do this thing. We're going to get really fast internet. There was also demand from the gamers at the beginning, like, yeah, fast internet, that's amazing, right? So I really believe that StarCraft changed the trajectory of Korean history. I was actually just in the Philippines talking about this, where, you know, I think that the Philippines can actually be the Korea of Web3 because, right, they've been introduced to blockchain, crypto, NFTs, non-custodial wallets, staking, DEXs, you know, actually, you know, mainly or primarily through Axie. So I think that Axie can have that effect where it's like very synergistic and harmonious with Web3 adoption, just like games like StarCraft were really important for internet adoption.
Yeah. And just almost like community. And when you were younger, it's like rallying, like when I played like EverQuest, it was like rallying people at the right time, in the right place to go. And like, you know, you have to beat this other clan to the, you know, this one, you know, thing that's going to get you a lot of experience. And it was like, you know, being like 14. And then you realize that, you know, they're rallying people of all ages. Like there's people up to like 65 years old that were playing that game. It's like, it's almost like in a weird way, like the training that would go on from something like that. And like, I always think back to, man, if I could have earned for the amount of hours that I put in, like it would, you know, or even like, you know, the competitions that are going on now, it's a completely different world for being, you know, 10 to 14 years old right now. And especially in a developing country. And, you know, I always kind of thought about what are the ways that you could kind of teach people finance at scale? You know, like when you're growing up, you don't know what a credit card is. You don't know, you know, you're like, well, credit, like it goes backwards. Like, how does it, like, do I owe it? I have to pay it all. Like, you don't know it, but with like, you have 12, 13 year olds that understand play to earn, and they understand I can earn something, but I also like this game, but then I can also understand DeFi. I like the way you're thinking about that. Cause it's almost like this is just a mass training opportunity for people to understand finance in a much simpler or better way.
It has to be fun, right? Like, most people, I think, like, so I went to school, I went to like, I don't know, the right schools, but like I always hated it. I was not the type of person who could sit in a classroom and or in a lecture hall and listen to other people speak. I never listened to podcasts. I never listened to my own podcast. I've never listened to anybody else's podcast. I always have to have it transcribed so I can read it. So I'm someone who prefers to learn on my own terms. Or to learn by doing, or to learn by discussion, to learn basically out in the wild. And I think games are, I was saying this recently, that games are actually schools. They, you know, by playing a game, there are many, many different types of skills that you learn. And, you know, I think people have been saying like, oh, you should add this educational platform on top of Axie. And I was like, no, that's totally wrong. Like Axie is an educational platform. The most powerful education is when you don't even consider it education, but you come out of it with all of these different learnings. And it's always kind of been a part of our vision. You know, I came up with the term scholarship because in the beginning, Axie was so unpopular or like unheard of that nobody wanted Axies, right? So it was like, okay, how can we frame this as something that people might want? So we were like, okay, like let's just start giving people Axies because they don't want to buy them right now. And let's call it a scholarship, like because by going through this process, you're going to learn how to download a wallet. You're going to learn about seed phrases, right? So like, let's frame it as an educational opportunity and people might be interested. And right, that ended up being like the way that we were able to grow during that last bear market was like just literally giving people Axies before the product was really fun enough. So yeah, games are schools.
Wait, so on that note about growth, I mean, I guess what you guys, how big have you grown? Like how many users, how many NFT sales have there been? Like, and what do you attribute to that?
Yeah, I mean, so Axie is the number one NFT project of all time by adoption. There are over 2 million unique addresses that hold Axies. The Ronin wallet has been downloaded 4 million times. Axie is the number one collection by an all time NFT volume of 4.2 billion plus.
Incredible. Congratulations, man. Seriously, that's amazing.
I like how you could just rattle all those off. You just got them. Yeah. They're great numbers. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, just like we're using the word game, right? For like, you're talking about Axie and everything as a game, but then we're talking about like nation building, which to me kind of feels like the, you know, what I think we've almost kind of coined as a dirty word now, which is metaverse. And it's like, do you, is that even like the correct term? Like, I feel like if that, it is the correct term, but it's not the term we want anymore.
Nobody who's saying that they're building a metaverse will ever build a metaverse.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like the correct term for what we're trying to, what's being built in my mind. Right.
The closest thing that we have to metaverses in modern society is actually Roblox. It's widely adopted. People, you know, there are developers that are earning money by building in the system. It's the closest we have to a metaverse. And yeah, it has nothing to do with VR or AR or fancy tech or goggles. But it works. It's, you know, harnesses UGC and it aligns incentives with its users far better than most gaming ecosystems and most modding ecosystems. But our stance is that Web3 is still a, you know, 10x improvement on the status quo, which is Roblox.
Yeah, I mean, the community side of that and the community ownership and the governance side of it, it just cannot be overlooked. And, it all kind of stems back to this, you know, solving of the double spend problem, which like, my God, did we, you know, unbelievable the amount of disruption that's been created from that trustlessness. And, you know, I know like a lot of, like, you don't even call it Web2 company, but just like software companies that are trying to go out there and utilize some of these terms. It's almost like it's done kind of a disservice to the people that are building really cool experiences. Cause you can say like Zoom's a metaverse a little bit, right? Like it's people there, you can interact with people, we're talking one-on-one. This is kind of considered a metaverse of what we're even doing right now. But it's like adding commerce for some reason or tokenomics to something that has like a distribution model seems to suddenly like change in people's minds. But I don't know. I just kind of a thought of like, I think it's kind of done like a disservice to go out with that word.
I think, yeah, like, I used to study like recursive incentives and like the most powerful study on this was like the red balloon experiment from MIT. And yeah, Web3 is just a red balloon experiment, but turned into an entire industry where basically, right, it's like everyone has some incentive to spread the technology and the adoption in a way that no open source project ever has and that the internet didn't have, right? It's like, I feel like one of the things that has been solved is like, okay, a double spend problem, but also like the incentive issue for open source projects, where now you have the ability to assign some sort of ownership to an asset that represents a piece of an open source project so that anyone anywhere can become a contributor and start working.
So on that note, I mean, I guess, you know, let's talk about governance for just a moment. I mean, you know, you've seen your users kind of shift. We've seen our users shift. I mean, how have you approached governance with your token and your user base? And I guess what's worked, what hasn't worked? What do you look forward to doing on that front?
Yeah, so we actually are currently in a credentialing process where we've asked the community members who want to be involved in governance and who want to be involved in the future of the Axie ecosystem to raise their hand and apply and make their desire to contribute known. We had over 1,000 people apply to be a part of that program, and we'll be kind of announcing, you know, the start of that program soon, right? So basically what we found is that, right, like most projects now are trying to like skip to the governance part. So it's like they issue a token, right? And then it's like, oh, like you have a snapshot page or whatever, and then there's a forum and then people can just vote, right? But I actually think that that is too hasty and not necessarily systematic enough. I think like part of what needs to happen is the community needs to figure out like what are the types of things that governance should even address? What are the types of things that the community really cares about? I think like, you know, once we identify the people who want to contribute and want to be part of the governance process, then it's like, okay, asking them questions that allow them to kind of define what they do, right? It's like, maybe, you know, we start off with councils. What are the councils that the community wants to create, right? What should be the role of those councils? How do they interface with Sky Mavis? And so, yeah, it's not a linear process, right? And most people like linear processes because it's very easy to figure out like what progress and what momentum looks like. But something like formation of a governance system, actually, you cannot be like, all right, this is where we're going, this is where we are now, this, we need to get there, right? Like that's how most things in life work. But I think for when you're creating a system of governance, you need to have that, like, I don't know, almost messy argumentative period at the beginning. America had it with like the Constitutional Convention, right? Where everyone just came, they're like, okay, we need to fix the government or whatever, right? And then it took like a really long time and a lot of fighting to actually land on something concrete.
It's a key piece of nation building. I mean, like it's interesting because we've seen there's some projects that approach governance as it's just, I don't know, one of the devs putting a poll up and letting people that hold tokens vote on it, and then maybe they act on it or not. It's not real governance.
To me, constitution is needed for a true governance system. Like a lot of debate, a lot of like people need to be angry about it. People need to really care about it. Right now, what I see towards most governance, basically all governance in Web3, is like apathy and low participation rates. I'm excited to see how this progresses. I do think that the founding of America, regardless of the current state of the country, I think the founding of the country actually provides an interesting template for DAOs and for governance, because that was the most decentralized system at the time, right? And it had this very special genesis and chaotic birth, like almost this like immaculate conception that was actually very messy, that I think is actually instructive. And, you know, like, for example, like there are a lot of mechanisms in the US Constitution that also like are analogous to blockchain mechanisms, right? the fact that you need to win, right, like across a broad geography, for example, through the Electoral College, right? That's like the founder's version of getting, you know, resisting a 51% attack, right? It's like you need to, you can't just capture the nodes and two huge states. You have to like capture a geographically diverse set of nodes. So
when you say apathy and low participation rates, it kind of like reminds me of the actual system that's in place for the U.S. government. Like, you know, low participation rate for elections, right? Even though it's close to 100 million people, there's, you know, at least 250 voting aged million people. And so there's something interesting there where it's, you know, are we setting the bar too high to think that suddenly 100% of the people are going to vote on every governance thing out there? Or it seems like the majority of the population might be like, hey, I still want it done for me. I still want someone that's really passionate about this thing and the mechanics of this thing to maybe be making more decisions. And then I kind of like proxy, I could potentially proxy my vote to someone else that I trust in some sort of way. Right. But it's a cleaner system where, you know, even if you multiplied the current Congress by 10, you know, you still have like a factor of 10 is only, you know, 5,000 people making decisions, but that's still like a lot better. And I feel like there's a rub there of how do you make decisions at scale with that many people when it's so bifurcated right now with the type of incentive models that are out there. Like, you know, I bet it, a week after we launched back last October with tokenomics and everything, I'm sure if we put out a governance vote, it would have been like, give everything away today and be done. Like, it would have been like, oh, just, yeah, everything away tomorrow and we're done. And it's like, well, that's not how you create something. And, it, you know, and if you even tie that back to a Bitcoin, it's like at one point, Bitcoin was the most centralized token on the planet. Right. And then it slowly kind of grows. And what does that adoption look like? But I agree with you. It's not a straight line, you know, and none of like, but it is interesting to think, you know, hey, there's one nation building, one thing, 200 years of like of lawyers and precedent and things going back and forth, people suing people. There's a lot of precedent there where we just like had a proliferation of like thousands of these. And it's just a new era, it feels like, for governance.
So yeah, I think like the surface area of governance has to be well defined, and perhaps that's a weakness of the current systems. Normal systems is like, why do we vote, right? And I think like people feel confused about that, both in Web3 and in real life, and because of that, they don't want to vote.
I've got a question for both of you guys, and because this is a hot topic right now, and it's one that's in my head because I just a little bit ago saw Mark Cuban. He's kind of going after Elon Musk in regards to free speech, freedom of speech on Twitter. And this has a lot to do with governance and who can make the decision on what. And he called Elon Musk out for being the judge and the jury on Twitter. And people don't know what, you know, they don't understand what their Bill of Rights are, and there's no transparency. I guess, how do you guys view how Web3 could help Twitter, what they should do?
One of the things. Oh yeah.
No, go for it. Go for it.
I've been trying not to I don't know, follow too much around the whole like FTX thing, and then now like this Twitter, you know, Twitter and Elon stuff. But I don't know, like I liked what, you know, what I liked is I reached out to Elon, and gave him a suggestion and he responded to me. So to me, that's already a big improvement, over, the last, regime, because I didn't know who to reach out to, and I don't think they would have responded to me, sure, to my feedback. So I think like he's setting a good example on how to build in public for a web 2 project. And that is kind of aligned with one of the, you know, with the ethos of Web 3.
Yeah. I mean, I have to agree with that, because I replied to him and he responded as well. And I was surprised. But at the same time, it's pretty crazy to, you know, I don't know how he finds time, you know, I guess, to do a lot of things that he's doing. But I do think that, you know, it's like any transition of power, right? Like it's rocky, and when you're transitioning power, the whole world's watching to figure out, will that transition of power happen in a correct fashion? And I think that's kind of what, you know, is great, like, about America and what's happening in a lot, you know, lots of other countries. But it was like, we kind of looked at that one at the last election. It's the same thing with companies, right? Taking something from public to then private, you know, it's like, they're still talking about Twitter on like CNBC every day, and it's not even traded. You know, it's like, it's right now, it's just like I think once the fire kind of cools down and we kind of get through it, I think you're going to see, like, I've already noticed small things on Twitter get better, just little tiny improvements all over the place that you would notice. Apps a little bit faster. It's opening a little bit quicker. What's going, they're getting rid of the fat, like, and those things that I haven't noticed on Twitter in a very long time. And so that's what gets me excited about what that is. But I don't, you know, you'd think it probably has something to do with Dogecoin, right? And payments, like, coming from like that kind of PayPal background, but I don't know. I guess we'll see. What do you think, John?
I think that, you know, it's still happening in this kind of Web 2 world, but one of the things that I like that I'm seeing is there's more polls, and you might agree or disagree with those polls. And those are like, you know, I think he did one yesterday about Apple or something. And then he did it for, you know, reinstating Donald Trump's account. And you might agree or disagree, but I think what's interesting is if they start to dive into the data of who voted and the significance of how valid the votes are, and really mining and understanding like what's happening, I think it's a starting point. But I think it definitely is like just the beginning of saying, okay, well, if there's a vote that's put up about what we should do, who gets the most say based on their significance towards the topic or their participation or whatever the data is. But I think it's a starting point, at least, to try and drive some dialogue. That part excites me. Look, managing one of these social platforms is one of the hardest jobs in the world. And there's no perfect path towards freedom of speech. They can fix spam. They can definitely fix spam. There's ways to go about that. Probably just also not easy, but they can do it. The freedom of speech thing, you're getting into a lot of people's opinions in a lot of different ways, and actually in every way. And so it's a delicate situation. And I all I can say is I wish them luck versus just hating on any efforts that they're trying to do.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So we got about 10 minutes left. Geos, what do you think? You know, I know, like, you know, you got your head down building, bear markets are building, we're doing the same, but, you know, taking that hat off for just a second and thinking about like a year from now, you know, what are we talking about? Like, what's the headline, you know, if we've kind of pulled out of this bear market a little bit? Like, I think a little bit about how we're horizontally scaling through kind of like application side chains, you know, with what's happening with like Supernets and Binance application side chain and like Avalanche chain. There's a lot going on there. I think that there's a narrative there, but like, what do you
see? I can tell we're in a bear market because people are talking about scaling infrastructure. Like, that's always a sign that we're in a bear market. People are not talking about scaling infrastructure during periods of adoption. So that's good. But what I've seen is that, right, there's always I think bear markets are split into two parts. There is like the first initial period where it's just like down only, and people are talking a lot about scaling. And then we maybe hit halfway mark and things start just getting choppy rather than down only from a price perspective. And we start to see fundamental new innovations and inventions starting to hit the market. Right. Like the last bear market, it was like 2018 was down only, and people were like talking about ETH2 during 2018. And also, like, I think a little bit EIP 1559. And then 2019 hit. I think Uniswap was like launched or started to get popular in like January of 2019. That was like an interesting sign. And then we started to see, right, like Synthetics launched yield farming or inflationary rewards in, I think, April or May of that year. Like Axie released a version 2 or classic with the tokenized experience points in December of 2019. Right. And that was like, okay, like now we have these potions that represent time and effort in game. That was a fundamental innovation. So yeah, like I think like basically we don't know what we'll be talking about right now, but it will be around something new, some sort of fundamentally new innovation that unlocks things for all applications across the space, right? Like when Uniswap came, Axie could never have risen without the Uniswap code, right? Or the idea of an AMM, right? Because it was like, okay, in the beginning, no exchanges would list something called love, you know, small love potion, but our players made a liquidity pool, right? And then it was like, oh, what? Like, this is something totally new that we've never really seen before in gaming. So I think like the cool thing about EVM is all inventions using EVM code are additive to all other EVM applications, right? So
I agree with you there. Like we actually talked about that a lot yesterday of like, I've got this thing about like node and code wars like coming and like, because really it's just, if you're EVM compatible, like that, like changing RPC should fall to the background for a consumer and a retail user, especially in a wallet, right? Like that should start to kind of fall to the background and it should become simpler.
There's like something like that, I think, right? Where like, I think like MetaMask ships something where it's like, it will automatically swap the RPC for you.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like I haven't like experimented much, to be honest, on going on these other L2s and stuff like that. I haven't find that, but you know why? Because right now, all of the things that you can do on L2 and sidechains, other than Ronin maybe, are things that you can just do on mainnet. And right now mainnet is like pretty cheap and secure. So, you know, but during a bull market, when we have new types of consumer apps that are going to be too like good and too fast to work on Ethereum during a bull market, that's when, right, we'll have to go on these side quests and side adventures.
Yeah. Well, you kind of sound like you're talking about composability and experience. And I feel like the last year and a half in Web3, we've almost focused too much like on the synthetics and on what's going on in like in DeFi, and not like, I just want to pay for like my pizza with Bitcoin instantaneously, mm-hmm. you know, in a very simple fashion on my phone or something. And I just feel like that was not the killer app. And it hasn't been the killer app yet, but it's like, I don't know if we've maybe focused enough on infrastructure, but you know, I don't know. I tend to agree with you though. Like the composability.
Yeah, there need to be more like consumer apps, right? It's like, yeah, we'll see. I at least there are some, and it's gotten more, it's gotten, you know, 100x more interesting since I joined the space in 2017. So.
Awesome, man. Well, we appreciate you coming on. Just let everyone know, like, you know, what's there to look forward to with Axie and Sky Mavis over the next month or two, and then where they can find you.
Yeah. So I'm Jiho. Follow me at @Jiho_Axie. Also follow Axie Infinity on Twitter, Ronin Network on Twitter. We have amazing Discords as well. Axie Discord is, I think, the largest Discord in Web3. And if, yeah, you want to started, that's a great place to check out. Also, if you want to learn what an amazing community looks like. December is actually going to be a packed month for us. So I'm excited to show the community what we're working on. We have, Land Alpha coming out. We also have season 2 of Axie Infinity Origins. And then we also have another surprise that people haven't found out about yet. So
when's that surprise coming out?
Yeah, it should be like maybe in this month or in December.
Okay. Well, if you want to announce it on here, you're more than welcome to.
I'll leave it for later. on the Ronin Network side, we're getting ready for the transition to delegated proof of stake or DPoS. We just had the Saigon testnet release, which is in preparation for that. And we're also getting much closer to being able to announce some of the initial game partners for Ronin. So.
A lot going on there, man. And congrats on all the success thus far. And we're looking forward to watching everything, you know, unfold for you guys and continued success. And so Jiho's from Skybase, appreciate it, John, as always. And we'll chat with you all backstage. Thanks, guys.